Journalist Jad Sliman of National Public Radio interviewed risk communication expert Peter M. Sandman on March 8, 2021, on public health messaging that aims to persuade the audience at the expense of truth, some examples from COVID-19 and earlier. This is Segment 8, Gilding the Lily, Three More Examples. For the other segments, the complete hour and 45-minute interview, or other content on risk communication, go to www.psandman.com.
In your H1N1 speech, you mentioned all this messaging about hand washing, and I'm recalling, flashing back to March, people, washing their hands for 30 seconds and then, wiping down groceries that they brought in, and it's sort of, now we're understanding that, this thing spreads through droplets, and this is sort of, even though that's the case, we still have all this theater where people are hosing down subway cars and doing all this stuff to stop.
It's hygiene theater.
Like, I wonder if, what struck out to me is even with H1N1, you were saying that this messaging is sort of, is misleading, that we know that this flu spreads through droplets and not through hands. But we got the same messaging with coronavirus, wash your hands for 30 seconds or whatever it was. Stick out to you?
There are viruses where hand washing is really important, where the spread is mostly through touch, and hand washing is crucial. Norovirus is an example. There are viruses where hand washing is the key. But even where hand washing isn't the key, it's harmless. It's cheap. There are countries where it's not cheap, where you don't have running water and you don't have soap. But for places where there's running water and there's soap, hand washing is easy and pleasant, at least not unpleasant, and inexpensive, and it will do some good. So they like recommending hand washing because there's no case to be made against it. Whereas, there are cases against masks, social distancing causes problems. And if you close schools and you close restaurants, you're damaging, harming kids or you're harming the economy, but you're harming nothing if you tell people to wash their hands more often. So it's the universal recommendation because it has no downside. But they greatly overstate its upside. Now, early on, they really didn't know to what extent fomites were the issue. There are three transmission vehicles. Fomites is through touch. Droplets is by convention, big droplets. And when they're small droplets that linger in the air and travel further, then we call them aerosols. So there's fomites, droplets, and aerosols, and they're still not sure of the percentages and under what circumstances, it's what percentage. And it matters because if it's mostly fomites, washing your hands is key. If it's mostly droplets, wearing a mask and socially distancing is key. And if it's mostly aerosols, ventilation is key. What works best depends on what the transmission vehicle is, and they're still not sure of the relative proportions, but they got pretty sure pretty early that fomites was a very small piece of the problem, and they kind of stopped telling people to wash their mail before they open it, and let their newspaper sit until it's 3-day old news before they read it. For those people that still read paper newspapers, they kind of gave up on those recommendations. But they didn't give up on hand washing. Even though it does very little good, because it does absolutely no harm.
It seems like this is another example of if the public would have been brought in a little bit. Like, this is the first time I'm hearing this fomites and aerosols, and it took you no time at all to explain it. Like, it seems like if that would have been explained, we're still trying to figure out if it spreads through this or this or this. So for now, wash your hands. So then when they know it's, these fomites are not really such a big deal, we can stop, pressure washing subway cars and all these things that, all this kind of theater that now seems like it's sort of entrenched. I mean, it's anytime, schools want to open, everything has to be wiped down. It seems like if the public were brought along it could have, it's easier to change course if the public is along for the ride, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I mean, I'm on the same side you're on. You know, I mean, I think, you know, trusting the public with more of the truth is a good thing to do. And I think the public will resist more of the truth to some extent because they've acquired the habit of not learning much. But people are capable of learning more and motivated to learn more. And the example I almost always use with clients is cancer patients. You know, if you or anyone you love has ever been diagnosed with cancer, you know the voracious appetite for information that most people have after getting a cancer diagnosis. And they learn humongous amounts about the relative benefits of radiation versus chemotherapy versus the surgery. And, you know, do I want this kind of mastectomy or that kind of mastectomy? And this kind of chemotherapy or that kind of chemotherapy? And people learn a huge amount of information and make all kinds of very difficult judgments. And then there's a minority that chooses not to do that and just says, doctor, I don't want to learn this stuff. Tell me what to do and I'll do whatever you say. There are such people, but most people learn a lot, you know, in the weeks after they're diagnosed with cancer. And I think people can similarly learn a lot about a pandemic and how best to manage it. Most people in public health think I'm wrong.
I mean, I think you're right. I know a lot more about viruses than before this. So are there any other examples from your, you know, that you see this simplification or this shaping in a misleading
way? Well, I like your example. You sent me an example that I thought was wonderful. And you know, I mean, I'll tell you your example so that you can have it in my voice if you want and use it in the tape. You interacted with and I won't mention the city, but you can if you want to, but you had a public health official for a big city, who said the city was entering the next the next peak, you know, that things were about to get much worse. And therefore it was critically important for people to take precautions. Be sure to wear your mask, be sure to socially distance, be sure to stay home, be sure to wash your hands. All the recommendations are super important because things are getting worse right now, even as I speak. And you know, you question him on it. You say, well, what's the evidence of that? I'm looking at the case count and I'm looking at the hospitalization data, which is granted a lagging indicator. And I don't see any evidence that our city is entering this next phase. And the city official admitted to you that there wasn't much evidence. And he just said, you know, it's a good idea to exaggerate how bad things are now so that people will take precautions so they won't get bad. And he basically justified to you greatly overstating the grounds for thinking that the city was about to go into the toilet in order to get people to wear masks and socially distance. And sure enough, for the next 2 months, the number of cases plummeted in your city. And then, you know, would they have plummeted if he hadn't misled them? Did it plummet? You know, did the number of cases plummet because he successfully misled people into taking precautions? Or did the number of cases plummet because the number of cases were gonna plummet and he was misleading people for no good reason? And I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I asked him about it kind of at another press conference and he said, you know, predicting the future is hard and I've kind of learned a lesson not to predict the future. But I don't know. I kind of noticed that like when we did actually get like kind of a second peak in the kind of late fall, I think we had another, a proper peak like in November, if I'm remembering it correctly. And I mean, he seemed reluctant to call it a second wave, which I think it kind of was.
He learned the wrong lesson. Yeah, I mean, the lesson was don't exaggerate tentative preliminary data. And the lesson he learned is don't ever claim you've got a peak. You know, it's just not the right lesson.
So, I mean, were you surprised? First of all, are there any other like examples of kind of messaging that you saw that from if you were the consultant in the room, you would have stepped in?
I mean, I'm sure there are, but I think we've got, you know, I think more than enough pandemic examples. And not that there aren't more, there are absolutely more. But I think it's important for you, and I think you understand this, but it's important for you to make sure that, you know, whatever you produce for your show makes it clear that this is not unique to COVID-19. It's not unique to pandemics. It's not unique to crises. That, you know, you could analyze, you know, routine communication about the seasonal flu and find exactly the same kinds of exaggerations aimed at getting people to take flu more seriously.
Yeah.
For decades, public health overstated the efficacy of the flu vaccine. Because they wanted people to get vaccinated, and, you know, saying it's a crappy vaccine is not a good way to get people to take it. So they pretended it was way more effective than it is. I think it's just important to realize that there are a lot of things about this pandemic that haven't happened in 100 years. But public health being misleading in order to get people to do the healthy thing, that's not unique to this pandemic, that's absolutely typical.
Yeah, and so that sort of gets at my next question, is I kind of wondered if you were surprised watching this, or if you were like, yeah, of course.
About misleading order to get people to do the right thing, it was yeah, of course. Right. As I say, I've had decades of trying to convince clients not to do that. Fair amount of success, not always, but a fair amount of success with the bad guys, and practically no success with the good guys.